Chapter 34. Mr. James Harthouse, going in for his adopted party, soon began to score. With the aid of a little more coaching for the political sages, a little more genteel listlessness for the general society, and a tolerable management of the assumed honesty and dishonesty, most effective and most patronized of the polite deadly sins, he speedily came to be considered of much promise. The not being troubled with earnestness was a grand point in his favor, enabling him to take to the hard fact fellows with as good a grace as if he had been born one of the tribe, and to throw all other tribes overboard as conscious hypocrites. Whom none of us believe, my dear Mrs. Bounderby, and who do not believe themselves. The only difference between us and the professors of virtue or benevolence, or philanthropy, never mind the name, is that we know it is all meaningless, and say so, while they know it equally, and will never say so. Apostrophe, why should she be shocked or warned by this reiteration? It was not so unlike her father's principles, and her early training, that it need startle her. Where was the great difference between the two schools, when each chained her down to material realities, and inspired her with no faith in anything else? What was there in her soul for James Harthouse to destroy, which Thomas Gradgrind had nurtured there in its state of innocence? It was even the worse for her at this pass, that in her mind implanted there before her eminently practical father began to form it a struggling disposition to believe in a wider and nobler humanity than she had ever heard of, constantly strove with doubts and resentments. With doubts, because the aspiration had been so laid waste in her youth. With resentments, because of the wrong that had been done her, if it were indeed a whisper of the truth. Upon a nature long accustomed to self-suppression, thus torn and divided, the Harthouse philosophy came as a relief and justification. Everything being hollow and worthless, she had missed nothing and sacrificed nothing. What did it matter, she had said to her father, when he proposed her husband. What did it matter, she said still. With a scornful self-reliance, she asked herself, what did anything matter, and went on. Towards what? Step by step, onward and downward, towards some end, yet so gradually, that she believed herself to remain motionless. As to Mr. Harthouse, whither he tended, he neither considered nor cared. He had no particular design or plan before him. No energetic wickedness ruffled his lassitude. He was as much amused and interested, at present, as it became so fine a gentleman to be, perhaps even more than it would have been consistent with his reputation to confess. Soon after his arrival he languidly wrote to his brother, the honorable and jocular member, that the Bounderbys were great fun, apostrophe, and further, that the female Bounderby, instead of being the Gorgon he had expected, was young, and remarkably pretty. After that, he wrote no more about them, and devoted his leisure chiefly to their house. He was very often in their house, in his flittings and visitings about the Coketown district, and was much encouraged by Mr. Bounderby. It was quite in Mr. Bounderby's gusty way to boast to all his world that he didn't care about your highly connected people, but that if his wife Tom Gradgrind's daughter did, she was welcome to their company. Mr. James Harthouse began to think it would be a new sensation if the face which changed so beautifully for the whelp would change for him. He was quick enough to observe. He had a good memory, and did not forget a word of the brother's revelations. He interwove them with everything he saw of the sister, and he began to understand her. To be sure, the better and profounder part of her character was not within his scope of perception, for in natures, as in seas, depth answers unto depth, but he soon began to read the rest with a student's eye. Mr. Bounderby had taken possession of a house and grounds, about 15 miles from the town, and accessible within a mile or two, by a railway striding on many arches over a wild country, undermined by deserted coal shafts, and spotted at night by fires, and black shapes of stationary engines at pits' mouths. this country, gradually softening towards the neighborhood of Mr. Bounderby's retreat, there mellowed into a rustic landscape, golden with heath, and snowy with hawthorn in the spring of the year, and tremulous with leaves and their shadows all the summer time. The banquet foreclosed a mortgage effected on the property thus pleasantly situated, by one of the Coketown magnates, who, in his determination to make a shorter cut than usual to an enormous fortune, overspeculated himself by about £200,000. These accidents did sometimes happen in the best regulated families of Coketown, but the bankrupts had no connection whatever with the improvident classes. It afforded Mr. Bounderby supreme satisfaction to install himself in this snug little estate, and with demonstrative humility, to grow cabbages in the flower garden. He delighted to live, barrack fashion, among the elegant furniture, and he bullied the very pictures with his origin. "Why, sir," apostrophe he would say to a visitor, "I am told that Nicketts, apostrophe the late owner, gave £700 for that sea beach. Now, to be plain with you, if I ever, in the whole course of my life, take 7 looks at it, at £100 a look, it will be as much as I shall do. No, by George. I don't forget that I am Josiah Bounderby of Coketown. For years upon years, the only pictures in my possession, or that I could have got into my possession, by any means, unless I stole them, were the engravings of a man shaving himself in a boot, on the blacking bottles, that I was overjoyed to use in cleaning boots with, and that I sold when they were empty for a farthing a piece, and glad to get it." Apostrophe, apostrophe, then he would address Mr. Harthouse in the same style. "Harthouse, you have a couple of horses down here. Bring half a dozen more if you like, and we'll find room for 'em. There's stabling in this place for a dozen horses, and unless Nicketts is belied, he kept the full number. Around dozen of 'em, sir. When that man was a boy, he went to Westminster School. Went to Westminster School as a king's scholar, when I was principally living on garbage, and sleeping in market baskets. Why, if I wanted to keep a dozen horses, which I don't, for one's enough for me, I couldn't bear to see 'em in their stalls here, and think what my own lodging used to be. I couldn't look at 'em, sir, and not order 'em out. Yet so things come round. You see this place, you know what sort of a place it is, you are aware that there's not a completer place of its size in this kingdom or elsewhere, I don't care where, and here, got into the middle of it, like a maggot into a nut, is Josiah Bounderby. While Nicketts, as a man, came into my office, and told me yesterday, Nicketts, who used to act in Latin, in the Westminster School plays, with the chief justices and nobility of this country applauding him till they were black in the face, is driveling at this minute, driveling, sir, in a fifth floor, up a narrow dark back street in Antwerp. Apostrophe, it was among the leafy shadows of this retirement, in the long sultry summer days, that Mr. Harthouse began to prove the face which had set him wondering when he first saw it, and to try if it would change for him. Apostrophe, Mrs. Bounderby, I esteem it a most fortunate accident that I find you alone here. I have for some time had a particular wish to speak to you. Apostrophe, it was not by any wonderful accident that he found her, the time of day being that at which she was always alone, and the place being her favorite resort. It was an opening in a dark wood, where some felled trees lay, and where she would sit watching the fallen leaves of last year, as she had watched the falling ashes at home. He sat down beside her, with a glance at her face. "Your brother." My young friend Tom, apostrophe, her color brightened, and she turned to him with a look of interest. "I never in my life," apostrophe, he thought, "saw anything so remarkable and so captivating as the lighting of those features." Apostrophe, apostrophe, his face betrayed his thoughts perhaps without betraying him, for it might have been according to its instructions so to do. "Pardon me. The expression of your sisterly interest is so beautiful, Tom should be so proud of it. I know this is inexcusable, but I am so compelled to admire. apostrophe, being so impulsive, apostrophe, she said composedly. Apostrophe, Mrs. Bounderby, no. You know I make no pretense with you. You know I am a sordid piece of human nature, ready to sell myself at any time for any reasonable sum, and altogether incapable of any Arcadian proceeding whatever. Apostrophe, I am waiting, apostrophe, she returned, for your further reference to my brother. Apostrophe, you are rigid with me, and I deserve it. I am as worthless a dog as you will find, except that I am not false, not false. But you surprised and started me from my subject, which was your brother. I have an interest in him. Apostrophe, have you an interest in anything, Mr. Harthouse? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she asked, half incredulously and half gratefully. If you had asked me, when I first came here, I should have said no. I must say now, even at the hazard of appearing to make a pretense, and of justly awakening your incredulity, yes. Apostrophe, she made a slight movement, as if she were trying to speak, but could not find voice. At length she said, apostrophe, Mr. Harthouse, I give you credit for being interested in my brother. Apostrophe, thank you. I claim to deserve it. You know how little I do claim, but I will go that length. You have done so much for him, you are so fond of him. Your whole life, Mrs. Bounderby, expresses such charming self-forgetfulness on his account. Pardon me again, I am running wide of the subject. I am interested in him for his own sake. Apostrophe, she had made the slightest action possible, as if she would have risen in a hurry and gone away. He had turned the course of what he said at that instant, and she remained. Apostrophe, Mrs. Bounderby, apostrophe, he resumed, in a lighter manner, and yet with a show of effort in assuming it, which was even more expressive than the manner he dismissed. It is no irrevocable offense in a young fellow of your brother's years, if he is heedless, inconsiderate, and expensive, a little dissipated, in the common phrase. Is he? Apostrophe, yes. Apostrophe, allow me to be frank. Do you think he games at all? Apostrophe, I think he makes bets. Apostrophe, Mr. Harthouse waiting, as if that were not her whole answer, she added, I know he does. Apostrophe, of course he loses? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes. Apostrophe, everybody does lose who bets. May I hint at the probability of your sometimes supplying him with money for these purposes? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she sat, looking down, but, at this question, raised her eyes searchingly, and a little resentfully. Acquit me of impertinent curiosity, my dear Mrs. Bounderby. I think Tom may be gradually falling into trouble, and I wish to stretch out a helping hand to him from the depths of my wicked experience. Shall I say again, for his sake? Is that necessary? Apostrophe, she seemed to try to answer, but nothing came of it. Candidly to confess everything that has occurred to me, apostrophe, said James Harthouse, again gliding with the same appearance of effort into his more airy manner, I will confide to you my doubt, whether he has had many advantages. Whether, forgive my plainness, whether any great amount of confidence is likely to have been established between himself and his most worthy father. Apostrophe, I do not, apostrophe, said Louia, flushing with her own great remembrance in that wise, think it likely. Apostrophe, or, between himself, and I may trust to your perfect understanding of my meaning, I am sure, and his highly esteemed brother-in-law. Apostrophe, she flushed deeper and deeper, and was burning red, when she replied in a fainter voice, I do not think that likely either. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mrs. Bounderby, apostrophe, said Harthouse, after a short silence, may there be a better confidence between yourself and me? Tom has borrowed a considerable sum of you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, you will understand, Mr. Harthouse, apostrophe, she returned, after some indecision. She had been more or less uncertain, and troubled throughout the conversation, and yet had in the main preserved her self-contained manner, You will understand that, if I tell you what you press to know, it is not by way of complaint or regret. I would never complain of anything, and what I have done I do not in the least regret. Apostrophe, so spirited too. Apostrophe, apostrophe, thought James Harthouse. When I married, I found that my brother was even at that time heavily in debt. Heavily for him, I mean. Heavily enough to oblige me to sell some trinkets. They were no sacrifice. I sold them very willingly. I attached no value to them. They were quite worthless to me. Apostrophe, either she saw in his face that he knew, or she only feared in her conscience that he knew, that she spoke of some of her husband's gifts. She stopped, and reddened again. If he had not known it before, he would have known it then, though he had been a much duller man than he was. Since then, I have given my brother, at various times, what money I could spare. In short, what money I have had. Confiding in you at all, on the faith of the interest you profess for him, I will not do so by halves. Since you have been in the habit of visiting here, he has wanted in one sum as much as £100. I have not been able to give it to him. I have felt uneasy for the consequences of his being so involved, but I have kept these secrets until now, when I trust them to your honor. I have held no confidence with anyone, because you anticipated my reason just now. Apostrophe, she abruptly broke off. He was a ready man, and he saw, and seized, an opportunity here of presenting her own image to her, slightly disguised as her brother. Apostrophe, Mrs. Bounderby, though a graceless person, of the world worldly, I feel the utmost interest, I assure you, in what you tell me. I cannot possibly be hard upon your brother. I understand and share the wise consideration with which you regard his errors. With all possible respect both for Mr. Gradgrind and for Mr. Bounderby, I think I perceive that he has not been fortunate in his training. Bred at a disadvantage towards the society in which he has his part to play, he rushes into these extremes for himself, from opposite extremes, that have long been forced with the very best intentions we have no doubt upon him. Mr. Bounderby's fine bluff English independence, though a most charming characteristic, does not, as we have agreed, invite confidence. If I might venture to remark that it is the least in the world deficient in that delicacy to which a youth mistaken, a character misconceived, and abilities misdirected, would turn for relief and guidance, I should express what it presents to my own view. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.